Push the on button, yeah.
All right. We're all started. We had the executive sessions that we went through. We're now into our board time agenda. We'll start with old business. So 1.1, the DES Department Head Measures for Success. We had talked about that prior to now. And that we will be developing measures for success, not just for that department head, but also for other department heads as we look at how we are measuring success moving forward with reconfiguration. So you can take this off the agenda. This is something that we're going to be doing as part of our reconfiguration and moving forward with all of our departments.
Scratch 1.1?
Well, yeah. So what we talked about there was a benchmark.
Yeah, exactly.
And whether it be quarterly benchmarks, it would be easier to assess.
Yes, we have a new system.
Awesome.
And the benchmark could be something that the department head would come back and share with us.
That would be a great thing.
They say we have this, we have that, and our benchmark is to maybe just keep all the employees happy and operate in our budget. All the way up to we're going to jack up the roof and replant the office.
Exactly. So, perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's 1.1. 1.2, CRC ballot measure and election time frames. We've been waiting on to see kind of what happens with legislature and all of that, and they're in their special session starting today. Did they start it officially today? So I think that...
Yeah.
Because they just continued, so yeah. So we should know something pretty soon on that.
I hear it's less than a week, maybe... 3 or 4 days.
There we go. So hopefully by next week we'll be able to know what we need to do moving forward.
Go ahead.
I would encourage us to finalize on verbiage and run by legal so that we don't wait until the last minute and say, okay, now we start the process.
In other words, be ready in case it's still appropriate for us to put this on the ballot.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with the city or if that's going to be even covered or if it's going to be a couple of something different, or the city, I think, is just can't use any city money for light rail.
Yeah,
and ours would be a little bit different. So
yeah, and I think I agree that we should make sure that we are prepared. The way all the words have come out to us is that if the Senate doesn't fund this, then it's
dead.
It's dead. But this cockroach has been wiggling for some time, and I think until it stops wiggling.
Yeah, so I
mean, it's incredibly important, necessary infrastructure project. You mean that?
Oh, I mean the boondoggle. You mean that one?
Different terminology.
So what you're saying is, prepare to move forward with it.
Yes.
Regardless.
Yeah. In other words,
you're right.
Yeah. Spray it with Raid after it's dead.
Even last night. I mean, you still hear little things, but. No, that's not what it meant.
Yeah,
we're going to 81 and 104.
So we'll bring that back next week. We'll work on it. I guess, you know, we've all been working on other stuff.
We're a little bit busy.
Now that we got the development fee stuff, at least all the work, and that was a ton of work on all our parts, plus staff.
And staff, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
Thanks to staff.
Okay. All right, so bring that back next week.
Next week.
County Administrator Recruitment.
Anything left. But I haven't got all my stuff. I haven't read my stuff yet. Still.
So we're busy or something like the rest of us?
No, seriously. So we got a one pager. So I guess let's do that. So we got a one pager from Francine and Bill on kind of here's what we heard from you three individually. Let's take this because I haven't had a chance to read it. Did you get the one pager?
It's there somewhere, but you're right. It's a matter of if you're going to have a life and a wife and you're going to still get stuff done,
sure enough,
keep it
each thing takes its turn. So let's go do our homework on that and come
totally
back.
With you. All right.
So next week.
Yeah, you can tell Francine we don't need her for that. Review membership expenses.
I went over a little bit with you. I went over a little bit with Bill.
Yep.
And we have some definite.
Well, we don't have to solve the whole thing at one time. I would say whatever becomes obvious, scratch it off.
So Bill, you and I talked, and I talked with you're going to take care of Portland State.
Yeah, and I have some information that I can...
Some level of reduction, different than what we
have. I'm going to talk with them about a reduction, and so I'm going to call them, and then I'll report back on that. I have information about the work that they do in Clark County for citizens, but I want to, I'm going to touch base with them and see what we can do.
So, yeah, don't make any commitments on it. But
no,
yeah,
God, no.
Yeah, input.
I'm not authorized to make commitments, man.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I'm one right. commissioner, brother. I
you
just one vote. So
are.
I don't know.
You want to talk about the other ones that you want off?
Yeah. One through five. And then, Bill, we had a different...
I don't have my list. What's one through five?
Chambers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Here. And my recommendation there was we probably shouldn't... Some of them have already been paid for this year, so we ought to think about it for beginning January 1.
So is there a way that we can develop, you know, to say, hey, look, we're concerned about, you know, we're looking to reconfigure our organization and cut expenses. We really need to know... Before we go into the next budgeting process for these, we need to be really focused on those, on memberships with those organizations, doing the work for the citizens that we can't, or something, yeah. some verbiage that yeah. gets us mm-hmm. their answer to why they're so important to us
mm-hmm.
in yeah. this.
So we could put this as intent for the first of the year.
Yeah.
Well, I also, the idea of, if we look at these, it's not a question necessarily of yes or no. Really, it has to do with, can we reduce some of these mm-hmm. and still support them? For instance, I look at the Washington Association of Counties, and you know, these are good, important organizations, but I wonder how our rates have been compared to other counties trending over since 2008.
And they set, we can get the rate structure from WASAC and WAKE on those, because they set them for all counties. The executive board of directors sets them for all counties. And I forget, I don't remember what the formula is, but it's a formula-based thing. It's not like they go and say, hey, what do you think you can pay?
Okay.
But they can, we can get that from them.
Okay.
Yeah, let's,
and,
so who,
and see what the trend
who,
is.
Who can, who's going to?
You're on the board of directors, and I'm on the ledge steering, so we're both... We can both make that call. Do you want me to do it?
Yeah,
or do you want to?
I'll have you just send an email to.
I got it. I got to talk to them about legislative stuff anyway.
Okay.
So I'll call them and get them
and
information.
Just, yeah, they probably have that.
Yeah, I expect that they must be. I wouldn't expect it if we're in a situation where we're trying to save something here. They're going to say, "Well, sorry, you don't pay the full price, or you're out." Mm-hmm. I expect they'd still like to have our money.
And then WACO, can you get that from, that's the Washington Association of County Officials, and so that's all of our other elected officials, the auditor, the treasurer, the assessor. Can you get the information from them on that, please?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
What about National Association of Senior Policy Analysts?
Yeah, nice try. We're looking on the list. I don't see it on the list, man.
I'm the state and national president.
You are.
The other one that we had down here is Woodland Chamber. Bill thought we gave money to Woodland Chamber. I don't think we do.
No, we gave them for their one thing.
Tourism.
Yeah, we gave them to the tourism.
Oh, that's right. They
and
that one.
But we took it out of a different fund.
Yeah, and I think tourism is a benefit.
Yeah, well, it's the gateway to it's gateway to St. Helens
yeah.
and to on those lakes that our citizens
it's
use.
It's really a pittance compared to what we invested into the Vancouver thing, but that's funded differently.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, we have some mandated things that we have to do. And one of the things that I recognize is that the Ripley's Horse Aid Foundation, they kind of bail us out when we go out and retrieve uncared for animals.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill was thinking that it might be a lesser amount. I don't know, Bill.
You told me to ask Paul about the number of animals that
Of. We're going to get something back from Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a number three there, that RCW says, I expect
mandate.
that we have to do something. The question is, do we have to do 30,000 per year?
That'd be something to go back and review with the RCW.
That's not our money. The commute trip reduction fund is state dollars that we administer. They are not county funds.
Well, then it doesn't belong. I would assume that this would be... that we have discretion over.
So at least that's the way
we don't have discretion over.
Let's review the RCW.
Okay. Because as I understood it, the CTR program was just passed through.
Okay.
We have to do it. It doesn't say how much.
Okay.
All right.
And the other one I'm confused and about.
And Axel can help you.
Human Services Council. We don't have an answer on.
Yes, we do.
They're the people
that
take care of the greeters.
Yes, they're downstairs who take care of our information booth.
Yeah, but they don't receive this money.
No,
the
organization.
The
does.
Organization does.
Who schedules all the senior citizens and gets them here for us?
Okay, the trauma intervention things and the chaplaincy captaincy, the way they put it in here, those are support groups for the citizens.
For the sheriff.
And the sheriff.
Sheriff uses them in times of trauma.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And CREDC, we're in there with pass-through money.
That doesn't exist anymore. That one's gone.
Yeah.
That's the county one.
And
that's not the state.
The one that I'm not in full understanding of is 9 and 10. If it's two independent ones, I think Bill said that the one is the base, $50,000 is base, and then the other part is part of the same money.
Correct.
But different.
So. And again, is this all, my understanding is this is all the historic preservation REIT that the state authorized and that they charge and that we collect. This is not general fund. This is
It's $1 from
my recollection was that just lists last year's grant awards.
Yeah. That's all it's doing. These aren't memberships.
I don't know
why this would be even under here.
I don't know
if it's organizations receiving county support, memberships, or above the line.
Okay.
So what this is, my understanding is, these people apply for things for historical value.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure what they all were, but that's what the intent of it is.
Right. And then, so it's a grant program, and that the money comes from a $1 filing fee that the state imposed, and that we get the money for, and that we, as a commission, then sign off on the grants.
Yeah.
So it's not a membership. It should not be on that sheet. It's not.
Well it's separated.
It's a grant to the county. The memberships are above the line. The memberships are up here.
Yeah.
Grant to the county. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Receiving county support.
It's funds that we get from the state that have to be used for that purpose.
Yeah.
Yes. And
just like everything else we do here. It's not a membership.
I didn't look at them. I think you're on the committee.
I chair it. Greg Kinsey is the vice chair.
And apparently you guys go through that. One of the things I spotted was the American Legion. I said, why would you give it to the American Legion and not the VFW? And the answer would be they submitted an application
for
historical value. And so that not.
So it's not an organization. That an organization submitted, which is maybe a clarification that would be helpful for this list. Instead of organizations receiving county support, these aren't organizations receiving the county support. These are organizations that submitted grant proposals for projects using a fund that isn't county funds. Mm-hmm. It's pass through funds that we use. It would be clearer if we were actually saying organizations receiving county general fund, receiving county general funds.
Discretionary.
Yeah, discretionary. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That would be clearer for us as opposed to trying to figure out.
So we got it now.
We could.
Number 11, mandated.
Yeah.
Number 12, we believe that's a benefit to the county. Mm-hmm. And the other is the CVTV. And another one is there to irritate me, number 14.
Yep. Just for you.
The Columbian.
No, I did that. That was my attempt at humor.
We're still laughing.
So that's basically where we are at this time.
It's been a while. I first looked at this early on, months ago. And, Bill, I don't even remember. Did we put kind of an information sheet together for each of these?
On the 8th of April, 2013, you said the only items you were to be held from now on, and I'm holding the invoices, for number 6, 12, and 13.
So here's what I'm thinking at this point, is that any funds that we have discretion over, that we ought to be able to know what's the source of those funds? Here's the little copy of the RCW that specifies why it's there in the first place. Mm-hmm. Here's how the range of value that it could be. Here's how we arrived at it, and here's the degree of discretion that we have. In other words, a little information packet for each, or a little sheet for each one of these.
Mm-hmm.
That was given to you when I gave you the original. The RCWs are on the back of this. When you did the original one.
Okay, well,
this was originally your request,
mm-hmm.
and then now it's your request.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have a third request.
Yeah, so the list of RCWs, that's good. Thank you. I was trying to remember what you gave me back then, because it's been a while. But it would be more than the list of RCWs. It would be helping us to understand if there's how much is really one of those questions that we need to be able to have answered. So we know if the RCW specifies the amount, then it's clear. Got to obey the law.
As you see, there's only three that have RCW or WAC. Mm-hmm. The rest are discretionary.
Okay. Well, even on the three that have RCWs, the question is, does the RCW specify the dollar amount?
I will get that.
Because a lot of people don't know that. So, in other words, I guess what the request is, for all of us to be able to, our information or our decisions are only as good as the information is based on. All we have is a sheet here, and on the other side here at RCWs, which is the reference if we want to do our homework. But what would be helpful for us would be to compile the information together for each one of these, a little summary that would help
summary.
Us to know if it's where it's coming from, if there's discretion as to where it can go, like do the historic funds have to go to that particular organization, or can there be other worthwhile organizations that hopefully we can open up to and maybe be better stewards of those funds.
I got an answer to one of them.
Yeah, and I can answer that one specifically because we agreed to it, and we can get the historic preservation grants program.
Maybe before I got here.
To you, on the last round of them.
Why don't we do a work session on this? Because it keeps coming up. It's a simple program.
It's a small, simple program that we open it up for applications to everybody.
Actually, the press release just went out. Anyone can apply in the county. It's a special revenue fund. It has about $70,000 a year in it. People apply for $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 grants for preserving things like a steam engine or a.
And the committee recommends the best based on criteria that were set up, and they recommend them to us, and then you get to see all the projects. You'll see them later this year. You'll see the first ones of
September 10th. They're due. You'll get to see who applied for what, and then you'll get to pick which ones to fund.
That sounds I'd love to be able to get that, and maybe we can help spread the word.
And by RCW, it has to be spent on that stuff. The auditor splits it. It comes in on a recording fee, splits it off into a special account. Can't be spent on anything else.
Yeah. So there's a category that needs to be spent on. So we want to make sure that there's enough participation to spread the word. Maybe on Facebook or something that would help. Inform others who have no idea there's an availability of funds there for some worthwhile causes. Okay. So all right. We're all on the same page where we were asking
I've
for.
I've got one to share back with you so you don't have to spend your time on that. And that's Southwest Air Pollution Control Authority. Mm-hmm. That's at 33 cents per person, I think it is. I think I just saw a bill or something like that come through. And they do the calculation and send us a bill, and I think I just recently saw that it's based on population at 33 cents.
In that case, then there's no discretion there. It's just simply
no.
So let's simple. Tailor this a little bit then. So because you just said discretionary, and you said it just a little bit ago. I like the idea of getting a little narrative of why are we doing things, what's the statutory background, or why did we end up doing it in the first place, and so that we have a little bit better knowledge. Mm-hmm. Because I don't remember how we got into some of these, and some of these happened before we were here. So so the question is, is good to get a little narrative summary for each one of these.
Yeah.
The question is, for which ones? And so that's...
Anything that is where there's any discretion involved as to where it goes, how much it is, where the choices of how it gets divvied up, if there be more than one choice of where they it can go to.
So discretionary funds, any discretionary funds being used, for... Got it.
Yeah.
So you're talking about 9 and 10 on the list.
I'm talking about the whole list.
Right, and not all of them will be... I mean, there are a few of them that probably won't be discretionary, but they can figure that out and say... And they can come back and tell us, this one's not discretionary. Yeah. This one, state pass-through or whatever.
And the other question, Bill, is if there's... Maybe this list is not exhaustive way.
No, this is all we do.
This is everything.
Yes, that's what you asked for.
Okay.
That's what you got.
So I have another question that is not very clear, and that's the timber dues. It looks like it's mandated. I don't know what references as far as RCW.
The narrative.
And that's what we'll get. We'll get the little narrative summary saying this is what it actually says. It says it's this many cents per thousand people or whatever.
That's the right word, narrative.
Yeah, I like the word.
All over it. Okay.
All right. Cool. So, Bill, do you have the go-ahead for what... Do you have clarity on what we want on this?
Yes, sir.
All right, excellent. So that's review of membership expenses. So we'll look for narrative summaries on those, and that'll come back to us when it's ready. Public Health Director recruitment. Bill.
I've met with every employee in the Public Health Department and the Department of Community Services, as I said I was going to do. And I have a really good feel for... what I feel is structural collaboration between the departments, which has already started, as opposed to any kind of consolidation. There are the barriers that existed before continue to exist, and that is very, very different forms of accounting and requirements for accounting and different funding departments in the state, as well as the union issues. There are different unions, and that would prove to be, I think, complex. And there just is a whole tone of excitement about the fact that I introduced this, the fact that I came and visited with them, that, gosh, we didn't know they did that. Gosh, I'm glad we're doing this. And this, there's a, and the management teams have already, without my impetus, well, maybe with my impetus, but on their own, have started to meet to form what I'm calling, I asked them to do a structural collaboration. What areas can we collaborate on and start generating efficiencies? And so with that, I'd like your permission to begin the recruitment for the public health director using the Department of Human Resources.
Do you have clarity on what the job description would look like based on your conversations with DCS and
it's the current job description is fine according to both both departments. It's fine. John Wiesman's like job description still stands.
What I'd like people to see is a the job or the organizational chart for all involved in that, and some time between now and next week to be able to actually do a little research on my own before we jump into an automated process to add one more highly paid administrator to this team when we're looking for cost savings.
So this would be replacing one, but what kind of research are you thinking you might that you want to do, Commissioner?
I want to be able to look at the organizational chart.
Job description, I would like to review.
That makes sense. So
that's part of the
chart. Okay.
Yeah, I think if we're serious about reconfiguration, we need to be able to, when we face those choices ourselves, and it's in our hands, that we do our part for due diligence and consider, is there a more effective way for us at least to be informed? If we're not informed firsthand, then we're not really leading by example.
So Will, go ahead.
Bill did his outreach there and was looking at the connection between community services and the health department and what part appeared to be overlapping but had some bumps along the way.
What did?
We had bumps along the way. They didn't quite mash up is what you are. Understand from you.
That's correct. They don't match
yeah.
up.
And our community services is huge and does cover some similar services, and I thought they might, but then you added that there's a union conflict, different unions. what I look at is that that portion of the health department that does community outreach into the neighborhoods. And we have part of the community services that also serves out into the communities.
Well, they serve the same patients. They don't provide the same services.
Right.
They can
right.
provide the same
so
different services
have
to the same
one
patients.
Person coming in from the health
yeah.
department.
And that's one of
person
the things
coming
they're
in
gonna
from
start
DSHS.
Looking at. That's one of the things they're gonna start looking
another
at.
Person coming in from community services. So I guess it's part of the org chart and mm-hmm. part of concern duplication of three services going to the same house, same patients, same clients.
For some of the stuff they do.
Yeah.
I mean, not
but
obviously not all. I mean, DCS and
yeah,
Department
Bill
of Health
shares,
have different functions.
Yeah, but Bill shares complexity in it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we could look at it a second time to weave them together. I'm not sure. I don't know.
I don't know
the answer. I don't know if
it's good to get the org chart. I think because it'll clarify a little bit as far as like think about so public health disease outbreak and public health
yeah,
crises.
That's separate.
Nothing to
yeah.
do with DCS.
Mm-hmm.
Environmental public health. Nothing to do with DCS. Public health has some role within kind of the treatment and, you know, the kind of work with our community for public health, people getting health care. But DCS is more focused more on the substance abuse and mental health and those aspects of it as opposed to public health. So there are differences in what they do. The structural questions of structurally what makes the most sense, frankly, I would look more to Bill and his conversations with the department leads, not manager necessarily, but the people in the departments to figure out what works best because, A, he's been here the longest and knows the departments, and, B, they know more about this than any of us. But as far as the trying to understand, all right, how can we be most supportive as a commission to make sure that they're doing their work in the best, most efficient manner. It makes perfect sense. Like, get the org chart, figure out what makes most sense.
Yeah, the detailed org chart. It would have every person on the team listed and where they're at.
Yeah.
It sounds like, in the meantime, though, they're not suffering. It sounds like you've had...
Yes, they are. They are. They're suffering with... Public health is suffering without a leader. They're very, very concerned. They would like it to be filled as soon as possible. They appreciate me coming over there and doing it, which I'm charged to do by ordinance. They're very happy that I did that. Got them talking to each other, and they would like to expedite the process as soon as possible, is their message to me.
What I was referring to is your positive comments early on about the collaboration of the team over there. It's a healthy thing.
They're doing it with an interim director of public health.
Which sounds good.
I sense a little bit of turf concern and union concern, and those bother me.
I disagree.
When I hear, what I think I hear, there might be a turf thing or a union conflict, having more interest or better interest than us providing service, I get concerned.
Understood. I would caution us as a board to not be basing our direction of our county administrator, who is actually tasked with the hiring of our managers, with our advice and consent, that when we give them that advice, that we are not coloring our interpretation based on our feelings or our opinions based on, but without information. So I like the idea of getting the org chart, getting the job description, get a little more information on this so that our advice to our county administrator is based on the information at hand as opposed to kind of the feelings of what may or may not be happening there. Because I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just simply saying I don't know. Yeah. But, we have good people that do and that are figuring this out. So getting information over the next week, do our homework, makes perfect sense. Is that what you're looking for, Commissioner?
On the
org
chart.
Excellent.
I'd like to see the org chart for community services.
Yeah, all of those involved. Like, people see the org chart.
It'd be because Department of Health and Community
because
Services.
Because it's not a matter of looking at the org chart and then saying yes or no. The org chart will hopefully prompt us to be able to have some dialogue on that and some understanding as to possibly optimizing the degree of cooperation.
Let me ask the question in reverse. I think we were looking at taking part of the health department and seeing if it would fit into community services, and we didn't fit very well.
Right.
What if we were to look at part of community services, would it fit into public health?
I think they looked at consolidating, which wouldn't put one, it would just be consolidating.
Would you put
the
it in
two?
The health department instead of part of the health department into community services?
I think looking at the org charts may help us
with on that, Bill.
We looked at consolidation of the entire department, sir.
Right. Not just parts.
Not just parts.
You didn't look to see if part of it would fit in the health department or part of it would fit in the other. You looked at
another
way
of saying,
the whole
thing. Yes, we did. Yes, I did.
Okay, so
and fine, don't worry about it.
The collaboration collaboration is a better verb to use instead of consolidation.
Okay. So we'll get information over the next week, and if you have questions about that for any of us, if we have questions about, this looks the same as this over here, why is it this way and why are that, then we can ask that of Bill. My request would be, and this has been the practice, is that we don't be digging around in an organization that may already be on tenuous ground.
Absolutely.
And be asking, calling over to Department of Health and saying, what do you think about going over here to community services and working with them? And And doing a lot of that digging only because it will increase the trepidation and the uncertainty of employees who already are kind of a little nervous about their future.
Well said.
And not individually, but collectively, kind of worried about what's going to happen here. So,
actually, I had the opportunity. I got to share this because it's positive.
Cool.
Up in Wasatch, we had, I can't think of her last name, Janice from the health department was there. And she was talking very a lot of positives with the health department. And confident, they were confident with what they were doing.
Good. That's great. Mm-hmm. So any other information that we need for this?
I think that'll get us going.
All right, cool. So we'll get information on that. That is old business. Commissioner reports, we have the information that was asked for yesterday as far as the freeholder resolution that was put out to next week will be coming in. Kinsey and those guys said they could be here at 4, so I figure we'll do all of our other business and then they'll be here.
Okay, because that was kind of interesting. Some things came up that we didn't think about, and I don't know, when we talked about those 5 positions, can we do that differently?
And that's what he's going to talk with us about. And I think he's going to have his election supervisor, and then he's going to come in. And I think he's even getting
Professor Carolyn Long from WSUV,
who is all about like options. You know, can help us like with those options. What options do we have with that? So they're going to come in at 4 to get us information.
Oh, today?
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah, because we'd asked them to bring in information tomorrow, yesterday.
Give us the answers.
That's what they're doing. Yeah. I mean, but Lickness isn't there anymore, and Lickness was the guy that he was the go-to guy.
The Parks sort of brought him back.
I know.
Invite him in for lunch.
You don't need anybody else if you got Lickness, but you know. And no offense to our new election supervisor, she's great, but she's not the fountain of knowledge that Tim was.
But she caught this thing. And that's good.
Yeah, which was a good catch.
Well, on this, I think it's important that we consider ourselves all from the Show Me State, that we look at the applicable law with our own eyes and see what does it say, and also compare those that have gone through a freeholder election in the past, lots of them, and determine which one of those were partisan and what process did they go through. Did all of them go through a...
We may not have that.
She's already done that research.
We may not have
that. Okay, well, I haven't seen it. So I'd like
that's why she's coming in.
That's why they're coming in.
Okay, well, I'd like to be able to end up with something in writing that I can see. I don't just want to listen to
opinions. She's bringing 15 sets.
And perfect. Sets? And then sets of...
copies for everybody.
And no matter what, we are going to have to take some action to change the resolution that was passed. Because the resolution, if the law is what the law is and what the Secretary of State and the Attorney General have said, we've got to do something. Yeah. To change that resolution, it just becomes a question of what.
I understand that's what we're going to have to do, but we didn't know how much flexibility we could do.
Right, and I think
we may be able to do that. Those 5 positions in each district.
Exactly.
We may not have to do any action to do it that way.
We have to.
We might jump to the election.
We have to change the resolution.
Well, we have to change the resolution regardless because it had the partisan piece, which they're saying you can't do this year. Right. And so
And we have it by position, so it would have to be changed.
So that would be changed.
Well, no, what I'm talking about by position.
I
think the elections office might be able to turn around and say, you know, they have the authority to do that.
But we'd have to change our resolution to comply with that.
Yeah. We have to set it.
It has it by position now.
So we'd have to change that resolution, then they'd put it on the ballot however we ask them to. Yeah, and then they have that freedom.
Okay.
So they'll come in there, they'll be here at 4, so we can go through all of the commissioner reports and staff reports and hopefully get all that. Commissioner Medore, you have something first, so why don't we go commissioner reports, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really it has to do with Robert's Rules of Order, just to make sure we're all going to take our term at chairmanship, and the degree of power that's vested in that chairmanship versus the facilitating of the meeting, I'd like to be able to have some clarification from an attorney on that to help us to understand how that's supposed to work.
Do you want to get a copy of Robert's Rules?
No, I have.
For the office? Or?
No, it's really simple thing. The reason that the thing that prompts this is when I was at the meeting yesterday saying, Mr. Chairman, point of order. Basically the wrapping up of the dialogue, the communication that goes on, the discussion part of the meeting, I think the way that's supposed to work is the way it worked at CTRAN last night, where somebody says, I call the question, and then a two-thirds majority vote can, you get a second, two-thirds majority vote can terminate the conversation and you vote on it. We didn't do that yesterday. Mm-hmm. So if the rules that we've adopted say, well, the chairman can say, hey, why don't I cut this discussion short? I just want to vote right now. If that's the way that we've decided, then I need to respect that. But if that's not the way, then we need to correct that because it didn't work that way yesterday.
So we generally try to get through all discussion, and I will put it back to you on this because in thinking it through, so my job, as I see it, my job as the chair is to keep order, keep it moving, and get our work, get the work that is on our agenda complete, and try to do it in some sort of timely fashion. There has been a tendency to run long on every meeting, on every agenda item. We had an important agenda item that you had previously been frustrated that we hadn't gotten conclusion on. So I wanted to get to that item. We had already had discussion. It's one of those things when you know you have the votes to move forward, you move forward. So you move. You get the vote done. You move on to the next item. So first of all, and I most assuredly cut off the conversation, and if that was offensive, my apologies. It is meant to keep us moving along. For the purposes of discussion, what I would ask and put it back to you is, how would you like me to deal with that? Because you have had a tendency to always want to have another. Well, I have one last point. I have a last point, and that's it's fine. But we kind of chuckle about it. That there's always if I say, well, any other further comments, there's always a further comment. But that extends things out. So the question is how would you like me to deal with that in trying to keep us moving to the through the agenda in a way that is respectful of all of us and of all the people that came to discuss issues with us and have other work to do? And I look to you for that guidance, and I'll take it.
Yeah, do we have an attorney here? Do you give us guidance?
I went to get it.
Okay, because we really need to know how it's supposed to work and respect that. The conversations, my agenda, and I think all of our agenda in conducting these meetings, especially a formal public hearing like we had yesterday, it's not just simply to get it passed and get a point of view. These are very important issues that we need to offer explanations for and insight. So those individuals that are concerned about those things, that they hear that we also address that. And so should we go, so it really has to do with philosophy. Are we trying to just get her done, which I'm a get her done guy, but I don't want to walk over people in the process. I want to make sure that if people have a concern, that it gets addressed. And the price you pay for that, sorry, it takes more time to express it.
So what I would say is that I have taken great pains to allow for that extended conversation. And if you look at the time, how much time we've taken in all of our meetings, it is much longer than it used to be for everything that we do. So it is absolutely about the philosophy of making sure that there is good time for conversation, but at some point, the conversation has run its course and we're just re-spinning the same rhetoric. It's time to vote.
And those are feelings, but the feelings are different in a separate category from Robert's Rules of Order. So we want to find out what does Robert's Rules of Order say about that, because we've already agreed, I think, to follow that as our guide.
No, you agreed to follow your rules that you passed about February of 2013, and when there is no coverage for those rules, you will refer to Robert's.
Right.
And that's what your rules say.
Okay, and do the rules address the topic we're talking about right now?
It has generally.
I'm looking for specifics.
I don't remember the specific incident very, very well, or exactly what's been. I guess where I'm going with this, I don't remember the specific incident and how it came down. I think that we always want to resolve to its fullest and say what needs to be said. I think that's important. But then there's also responsibility of moving the meetings on, too. So it's kind of a tough balancing point that we all three have to respect and try to move along with. So I'm not quite sure
There he is.
You remember how I come down? I don't.
Well, Chris was there. Hi, Chris. Welcome.
Chris, gentlemen.
You thought you left,
Chris. Chris. Have a seat, man.
Yeah, this has to do with making sure we understand.
Oh, okay. You come on around here. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yes, to make sure we understand how to conduct our meetings and what the rules say for Robert's Rules of Order and what our own tailored version of that means. And in particular, it has to do with the little incident that unfolded yesterday when Steve, as our chairman, terminated the conversation just short of what I wanted to make. I wanted to make one last point and went to vote. And I said, Mr. Chairman, a point of order, and he just moved on. So the question is that appropriate? Should I respect that and just say, well, we vested that authority in the chairman, or is there a more of an orderly way to conduct that meeting?
Well, I don't know if I can answer the question exactly the way you framed it, but let me tell you what the rules say. Our rules and procedures say that you look to Robert's rules only when an issue is not specifically addressed in our rules, but it's not in this case, so it is appropriate to go to Robert's rules. If you look to Robert's rules on debate, it does contemplate up to 10 minutes for every participant or each of the parties that have a right to debate. It does provide two things that are not entirely consistent. On the one hand, it contemplates that the chair will ask whether or not debate is done before calling for a vote. On the other hand, it vests within the chair the authority to prevent obstruction or annoyance of the board, whatever that means, and says that if he feels like there's some obstruction, he can take action to ignores my term. I forget the exact term that's used in Robert's rules. So there are two sort of competing interests, all towards the goal of keeping things both orderly but giving all parties the right to talk. So that's what the rules specifically say. And so how it applies in a particular case depends on, you know, what the circumstances are. So that's my answer.
So really the appropriate response is if there's an annoyance or you feel like it's really counterproductive to continue in the judgment of the chairman, then at that point he puts a stop to it, or I put it, whoever's the chairman puts a stop to it and say we're just going to move on.
As I said, the rule doesn't say exactly how you're supposed to proceed from that point. It vests within the chair the authority to not allow the obstruction or the annoyance to continue, and it doesn't exactly say what measure they have to take to get there. Ignoring it maybe is one alternative, but it's not the only one, obviously. Again, it depends on the facts that you're dealing with. In this particular, I'll leave it at that.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
I don't remember exactly how it came down, but we had been discussing it for some time, and then Commissioner Madore wanted to say something else, and the chairman said no, we were done with discussion, and then he called for a point of order. What happened then?
Well,
and point of order was called after we took the vote, just to be clear.
I think that's right.
It was, because then that was why I asked, what is the point of order? Is the point of order to ask for reconsideration, which is within the rights of any board member?
He said no.
He said no. Yeah. Thus, the agenda item is finished.
So then it was addressed properly.
Well,
the question is, should I have actually moved to the vote without, you know...
Right, because I was trying...
That was the question.
Right. I was trying to express one last point before the vote, but the rush was while I was calling for Mr. Chairman that you were proceeding.
Right. And the annoyance that I will be 100% clear, and I said it earlier, is that you have a tendency to always have at least just one last point, and the annoyance is not my own, and Commissioner Mielke pokes me on a regular basis when I say, is there anything, any, does anybody have any final thoughts or is there any more points? And there always is. And then he pokes me and says, why are you asking for a final point? So in trying to serve as the chair, it was simply saying, all right, this is, we can always have another point. And then if you make a point and say, I look at it and I say, gosh, well, that wasn't correct, or that's something that, well, then I'm responding, then we're responding, and then it continues. So that was the purpose behind it. Like I said, what I'm trying to get at is I don't want to get to that point. I would like some guidance from you. How can I, you know, how can I help you to have all the conversation and the deliberation that you feel is necessary without us getting to a point where we are.
I observe both of you debating back and forth probably more so than what should go on, and mm-hmm. you probably should make a point of order. You don't have to agree, but then don't go out and try to counter the other person again. So I think we might both be guilty.
Yeah.
So we need to make our point. They might be different points. You right. don't have to clarify the
right.
point.
And as far as the last word goes, like when we do commissioner communications or something like that, I ask him, I ask you, and then I talk. There is no rebuttal to this. And so you're not always going to get the last word. I'm not always getting the last word, that's for darn sure. So it's, that's the reality of things. But to be respectful within that, I look for help with that. I don't claim to be perfect within that, that's for sure. And I think we have the understanding. I mean, what other kind of questions for Chris?
Well, what would I like? Well, first of all, it would be for us to always demonstrate consideration, respect, conduct ourselves with patience with each other, welcome that participation. As I see it, the role of the chairman is to facilitate a healthy meeting. It would be extraordinary situation where you consider discussion to be an annoyance to the point where you terminate it and move on. It's always appropriate, I believe, to say, are we finished with discussion? Yes, that takes a little more patience. Yes, that could extend the meeting, but that's a very orderly, inclusive way for us to maximize our courtesy and our respect for each other.
And then that makes perfect sense. And my request back to you would then be, just because you haven't had the last word on a topic doesn't mean you have to add something to get the last word on the topic. And so I would ask that if you feel like you've said what needs to be said, that we can then move on without having to get that last little thing in, because that continues the discussion along. I mean, it continues the discussion as opposed to us breathing and showing that respect to move forward. And that would be my only request back on that. And I will absolutely, I will ask if the discussion has ended.
Thank you.
You got it. I will absolutely do that.
That might work.
I will do that, and I will tell you this, that you, anybody who knows me and anybody who has watched me for the 6 months that I've been here has made comment to me, I have shown more patience in the past 6 months than I have shown in most of my life. So
at least since we've known you.
At least since you've known me. Pauline remembers me when I was first here. And exactly, she's raising the roof for that. I don't say that for, you know, to get kudos for it. I just say it to recognize that and you will get to see this as chair. It takes great patience to manage these meetings, and in a couple of years you'll get that chance.
I do jokingly nudge him and say, why did you ask?
He's a
pain. Anybody
in
else
my
have that? I didn't
ain't
say that. I
said, while he's doing
why did you ask that
time.
Question again?
Yes, so. Great to be the vice
We're
chair.
We're all going
to
take a turn at that.
Oh, trust me.
Be nice.
All right.
That's
we'll
talk as a team.
I know you got lots of stuff to do.
All right. Appreciate the insights. I will work.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks for bringing it up. All right. Other thing? What other things do you have, Commissioner? Thanks, Chris. Okay, nothing else. Commissioner Mielke? It's to you. What things do you have?
I'm not going to belabor a whole bunch, but I want to tell you how great the WASAC meeting was.
Oh, good, yes.
And if this ever comes back up, or if the request for, to WASAC is to put this back on the agenda to do again, because there's so much to take in, everything from adopting Obamacare and Bill, self-insurance on health care was huge. Several people have shared their stories of how they have put in place a self health care and even have their own clinics with doctors there and have saved millions of dollars. And so I won't go into depth. That was just one. The adoption of the Obamacare, it seems like it's even the three presenters had a little different take and didn't have all the answers, and it's complicated, and something that they were all working on was a 60% rule, which means that if you gave more or less than the 60% of the health care, you're going to be penalized. They didn't answer the question, what if we didn't provide health care at all and just paid the penalty? It might be cheaper than trying to do the other. Did not get into health care and how it fit into Obamacare. But I think that it was such a positive thing, and the savings was so vast that I'm anxious to see how far along you were, because you've instigated that.
We have our first meeting tomorrow.
With awesome opportunities. They covered the lean project and made note that we have started that, and I shared back that we also spread that a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had made mention, that it might be good to have staff, have a couple of people going to participate or hear that. What were you thinking?
Absolutely, because one of the things that they talked about in the reorg or in the lean process, and they also tied it together with something called the Kaizen.
Kaizen
is part of the lean process.
Okay, yeah, part of it, but they had a separate presentation of it.
A Japanese word, right?
And that is that we come up with maybe the idea, and then we go to staff and say, staff, I want you to do it.
That 1 week, the 1 week where they laid out that huge long thing for community development for the permit office? That was, that 1 week was their Kaizen process of actually us, and Marty kind of giving them the general direction, then come together and say, here's the process now, and here's how we might do it, and all that.
It was really great. You see what Marty is putting this in place with the redesign. Mm-hmm. To bring someone through like on an assembly line,
some feng shui.
And instead of just park them along the way and come to conclusion, if they don't have their paperwork in order, turn them away then with a greeter. Mm-hmm. And then on the other part, as we change process or policy, that you go back to our staff, because they're there every day, and they're applying this work to get the to the conclusion of the day, that they look at a different way, and they do that by removing the junk, what they don't think is necessary, and whatnot. So if this is offered up, we only had one other person there from Clark County from the health department that we would be so well off to encourage and take our staff there
to another training that they had left.
Yes,
better do it before you cut them.
All managers, all managers. We're keeping all the managers.
Okay.
So. let's see. I'm looking on my hand.
We're doing some lean stuff here, right? We had just 2 weeks ago or so.
We got the courts did it, and we got Marty did it, and Marty's probably going
to
get on
the first
commercial
one.
We had a big lean thing here in this big class in here, right?
Big training.
They were reporting out on
that. Was in service for all of us.
One other thing I remember that we talked about workload, and and reaching from assignment to work to finish. And sometimes what we have a tendency to do is overload our staff with too many projects, when in reality they can only handle 2, 3, or 4 at a time, depending on what those projects are.
And so well, Henry's got the quiet zone going. He's on.
So, yeah, this is perfect for Axel. So what you do, you have a list of things, list of projects not assigned, but you don't assign it to someone who has their plate full. You allow them to remove something from that plate, and until then they reach out and take in the next object or process or mm-hmm. or task. But by doing that, you don't overload, and you'll accomplish something to finish. Otherwise, you end up with a whole bunch of things unfinished. Mm-hmm. And so those are some of the things that. And then if something is really priority, then you pull something out from that employee
and
put it on back on holding mm-hmm. and do that. Those are really good points to remember.
And I'll chime in. I see that a lot in Marty's department. He's got, I always feel like with Marty, when we're working in community development, we've got like 30 number two priorities, whereas we should have like 5 number one or 3 number one priorities. And it gets really hard because we're going to finish up marijuana to some degree on the 25th, hopefully wineries. We've got the kennels coming back. We just got the fee waiver one done. But right on the heels, Commissioner Milkow is going to bring up in your report the panhandling. The gentleman, Kim, mm-hmm. he wants us to research and look in panhandling.
Gene mm-hmm. Gardner talked to us about that today at our work session.
And then we've also got a request to update.
On the side, he was saying, Shane came up to us just before the work session and said, hey, I wanted to talk with you guys about the situation at 99, because I asked him, did you ever find the young pregnant woman that was potentially heroin addicted? And he said, well, he got Yellow Brick Road, I think is the name of the group. He got Yellow Brick Road, which is a kind of a runaway group, got them involved, and they were going to send somebody up. And I was like, yeah, let me know if they found them and if they're helping them. And he said, sure. He's like, yeah, I wanted to talk with you guys about the panhandling situation and that we really don't have an ordinance. And we said, funny you should ask, because we actually said, let's go talk to the sheriff's office. And he said, yeah, we have some ideas about how we might be able to help with that situation, through ordinance.
That would be really good. I'd love to hear more. How can we hear more?
Shane, follow up with Shane.
We got to research and we got to do the work. And the panhandling one is one, but we've also had a request to kind of go through, fine-tune, and update the sign ordinance. And so the reason I'm making that point is that those all require, obviously, work sessions, notice requirements. They all require resolutions. All that stuff's just on top of the actual work to research and rewrite the code. So
and you have a master project list that you approved at your retreat.
Right. Okay.
Sticky notes.
One more thing to add. No, keep going.
They used visual guides, visual helps. So, example, a good thing was down in Marty's department of all the things they're working on.
Mm-hmm.
They literally have a grease board, and under the name, they have all the things they were working on.
Yeah. For the lean stuff, you mean?
Almost anything. Because when Marty or someone walks in there, they see who's working on what, mm-hmm. how they're doing. And the good thing was, in the process of permitting, that when they get people come in wondering where their permit is and whatnot, they can walk up there and see it on the board. And when they pick up their application, they get to go over and wipe it off.
Right.
It's quite a gratifying thing to the man that gets the application. Time frames wise, the same process, but the visuals were real impressive. Whether you use grease boards or whatever, they had examples of them there. But
cool.
I will talk with Eric and see if they're going to bring that back up. Maybe by popular demand. This place is full.
Good.
And everybody was talking about it had to be one of the best seminars that they've ever done.
So it's well worth your trip.
It was, but just so much to consume. I would go back through the whole thing again, or parts of it. Maybe I don't have to do the healthcare part. Maybe our health department, a couple of them would go, a couple of the managers, or depending on how.
Did they record it? Is it available?
No, it's not recorded.
Hmm.
Cost you
they want you to go.
Cost you $160 bucks if you want to know the song. But anyway, it was great. I had to come back and share what little I had to share with you.
That's great. Anything else?
No. You got with me back on kennels. Marty's going to come talk to me about kennels.
Cool.
Oh,
I'm done.
It does, your kennels question does bring up a point. We have a public hearing scheduled for the 18th for the, and two for the 25th, was that? Or the other way around?
Yeah,
I forget. Two for the 25th, yeah, the marijuana and wine were on the 25th.
Let's make a workshop. Let's make, let me see, 25th, that's, yeah, we've got time. Let's make sure that we're up to speed on what on what's being proposed there first, because I sat in on the Planning Commission meeting where they discussed, I think, the winery and something else, and both of the proposed solutions, I thought, they're nonsense. There's no way that that's going to, it's going to make, it's not, doesn't resolve, doesn't provide a workable solution. And if that's what's being put forward to us, I'm thinking, we're not ready. That's...
Which one was that on commission?
That's in the color advisory.
Yeah, the winery was one of them, and I was thinking the dog kennel was another one. And the solutions were didn't help at all. For instance, the dog kennel thing, it was said, right now there's a thing where it says the building should be soundproof, yeah, which right. means nothing.
Right. Yeah.
And they replaced that with that it should attenuate sound, which also means nothing. Because you can put a piece of foil between us and it attenuates sound by 0.1 dB. It attenuates sound.
Yeah.
So it doesn't help. So we want to make sure that we don't go to a public hearing to do something formal with something that we haven't even looked at and consider, is this really a good solution?
Yeah. I think Marty's working on that to bring back to us about the kennels, because it was our fault for not being more clear for the hearings examiner.
It needs to be fixed. We want to make sure it's the right fix.
And then I saw in the paper, I think it was today, Washougal.
Dogs.
This dog commercial kennels can have all the barking they want.
Right.
So from one extreme to the other, we're somewhere in between, but we're going to get there. But it's
so kennels, when is kennels scheduled for hearing?
I think kennels is earlier than the other.
Is that the 18th? Okay, so...
Well, that's coming up.
That's coming up. That's next Tuesday.
I got to double check.
We need a copy of it.
25th.
Because the kennels one was supposed to be a narrow fix.
We should have all the information available to you from the Planning Commission meeting.
Yeah, well, I looked at both of those, and I thought, that is not ready for adoption, not even close.
Also, Washougal's dog commercial dog kennel was at the port. Canvas Washougal Port.
Right.
That's a whole lot different than our kennels being in the country with neighbors.
Next to the neighbors.
With neighbors, yeah. No doubt.
Yeah, I think the winery one, I think that's based on a process that has with home business, and yet their solution was to make it not a home business, and so it was like you could not have upset the neighbor more than that meeting that day.
I know.
It's not ready.
I know.
So did Marty comment back that these needed to come back for work session, or was he feeling like, we're ready to go to hearing? Did he say anything?
Because we've already work sessioned before the Planning Commission.
Which is the usual process. I mean, the Planning Commission may not, they're going to advise us and give us an idea. A lot of times we say, thank you very much, thanks for the conversation, but we're going to do something different.
Well, it was the Planning Commission was just simply having a workshop, just hearing what staff was proposing.
They had a hearing too.
Yeah, they had. The hearing was not that. This was the workshop. So
you were hearing the workshop.
I sat on both.
Okay.
So maybe we probably should see what's going to be proposed. Maybe we don't like it. We don't want to come up on the agenda. We don't want to have the workshop.
Yeah, we're not ready.
Why don't I get you the materials for those three things?
Okay.
Okay.
Next Wednesday, you have looked at them and say, these are either ready for hearing or we would like to workshop
so
ahead
and
of
Tuesday's the 18th, right?
Yeah, on the dog kennels. On the two that are pressing, though, so the wineries, the season of when people are going to be going out to these is, it's on us. And so trying to get something figured out so that we can not have another season like we did last year with everybody at, well, not everybody, with a couple of neighbors and a couple of winery owners at each other's throats to get it. There is a time pressure, at least that I'm feeling, so that we don't go through another season on that.
Oh, wow.
The medical marijuana gardens,
need that done on the 25th.
We've got to do something on that. We either have to extend the moratorium, because we're coming to the end of our moratorium, and so we don't want there to be
let me make a recommendation, Commissioner, and see, and you can tell me this is terrible or not, but you know how the workload is here. We got 2 weeks until the 25th. We got a week until. Why don't we just stay the course? I'll get you the materials. If you want to continue the hearing because you're not comfortable with the recommendations and you haven't got it resolved at the hearing, then we'll just continue the hearing. But I mean, the 18th, you can continue that hearing.
It's a good recommendation.
You're right. The materials. We want to get the materials as soon, early on, because we don't want to look at it for the first time when it's on the agenda.
You should have it right now. It should be.
It's either we'll get it today or tomorrow. I don't know when.
We don't want a bunch of people to show up and we're not ready.
But when we start rescheduling hearings, it gets Rebecca in a bind with canceling, renoticing. Yeah. So we've got these on the books already.
Okay. Right, but I would think before we schedule public hearings on big on things like that, where you're gonna that we really ought to go through our own board time on it first to make sure we know what we're gonna present.
That's a good point. I mean, I would rather. Right. I don't want something to come before us. We're not ready. A bunch of people saw the notice and showed up, and we turn around and say, I don't like this. We need to go back.
Yeah.
That is why we work session it before the planning commission.
Yeah.
Well, but board time also.
That we haven't seen what's coming back, though.
Okay, so we've got the 18th and 25th. Let's brainstorm about how we can do this real fast. We have people that are waiting to talk with us. Kennels is on the 18th, and it's the least time sensitive. Okay. So
let's see what's on our computer.
Why don't we pull Kennels off of our 18th agenda, because we won't have a time to talk in board time or in work session ahead of that, which Rebecca's going to hate me a little bit for, but that's fine.
When you're the chair, you'll get that.
Right?
Yeah. Only two things. So maybe we just work review on some language that makes it work.
Let me just look at today's
the Kennels should be simple, but from what Commissioner Madore is saying, it's not.
It's just one word, right? That word you didn't like.
Well, it went from soundproof to attenuate.
Hold on. So we have people. Here's my thought. Get that information. Talk with Axel. If you still feel like you want that pulled, that we're not ready, I'll trust your judgment on that. So if you say, hey, I don't think this is ready to be on the agenda for next Tuesday, if it's not as simple as, hey, we may need to change a couple words, because it should be narrow for the Kennels, then we'll pull it and renotice.
And we talk about the process then, because our process is we come to you in a work session. You say go to hearing or not go to hearing, and you said go to hearing on all these.
We did.
After work session.
Understood. We said take it to the Planning Commission, and the normal function is that once it's sent to the Planning Commission, they have their hearing, they give us their advice on what's moving forward, and then we go to hearing.
That either.
Well, it depends on I think we're assuming the way the Planning Commission is running is a little bit different than the way it is. They're
not
good people. I really like
I think we have people.
We do.
Five
people. Good grief. Okay.
We'll come back.
So save that thought. As far as the Planning Commission and how they function and how we might be able to help them be more effective to get what we need out of it moving to hearing. So let's come back next week.
Yeah, I don't want to change the Planning Commission because I want to say good things about it, but it's not a brainstorming process. It's a listening process.
What, the Planning Commission?
Yeah.
Well, they're... Yeah, they listen and then they deliberate and they take and they make an advisory vote to us. But if that isn't working the way that we need it to, we can talk that through.
They don't do any kind of voting at all during their work session.
Not during the work session, but during their hearings they do. Like we do.
Right. But the work session is not the brainstorming process to refine something.
No, it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
We're not asking them to do that. Because they're not starting from scratch. They're starting with what we send them from our work session.
Yeah. I think probably just simply to get a copy of what they will help
us. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It'll speak for itself. It'll offer some insight.
Perfect. Good. Okay.
So yeah, talk with Axel on that and see if see if we can keep it on for next Tuesday. It'd be great if we could, because it should be a relatively narrow
change.
I'll
see if we can come up with some refinement that will actually.
And don't even worry about finishing the refinement. Just see if you think that there could be a refinement that we can make at the hearing to get us to it, because it should be a narrow hearing. Because the kennel stuff, it was go to the WAC and fix the stupid word about the soundproof.
We were just talking.
Hey, Mr. Lucas, we were just talking about how, like, you know, this.
Hey,
I didn't disappear far
enough. No, you're.
I'm so glad you're here.
That your wisdom was being sought, and your ears must be burning. So yeah,
or his phone line at least.
Or his phone line at least.
Yeah, pretty nice.
How's retirement treating you, man? A lot of sunburn. Have you been on vacation? Have you been on travel?
Enjoy my yard.
Good. That's awesome, man.
So, David, I just responded to your email yesterday morning. I'm sorry for not getting back. You sent me an email yesterday morning. I just now responded to it. Sorry for not getting back to you earlier.
Okay,
thank you. I haven't even looked at my email.
There's a big pile waiting. Thank you so much, Greg. Thank you for coming in.
Again.
Yesterday we had asked for a couple of pieces of information. We had postponed the action on any changes necessary to a freeholder resolution till next Tuesday. So we need to get some information.
Yeah, thank you. I think this kind of said, I'm just going to say Steve and Dave and Tom, if that's okay.
That is fine.
I already offended you yesterday, man. I don't call me my first name. Call me whatever you want at this point, all right?
We're here. I think the general comment yesterday, request yesterday, we want more information about this. We want more information about this various methods of electing freeholders. How do we put these people in office? So I thought it might be helpful to bring some additional resources to provide information to you. So, first, of course, Kathy Garber, our acting election supervisor, has...
The finder of the issue.
Is it Kathy with a C or a K?
With a C.
Okay.
And you heard my introduction to Kathy yesterday, so she's got about 13 years or so of experience in elections world and has been acting as our elected supervisor since we were betrayed by my right here. Sitting to Kathy's left is Dr. Carolyn Long from WSU Vancouver. I'll let her introduce herself. And, of course, Mr. Walker, who is becoming quickly the county's leading expert on elections law.
Sorry about that.
And, yes, I am very pleased. I just so appreciative. Mr. Lickness, I'll first offer up to you, Kathy was wise enough that she contacted Tim yesterday and went over some various issues with
that's
Tim.
That's very
wise. What's your hourly rate?
No, seriously. Definition of an expert.
We heard of people coming back as a consultant, but not this quick.
You can. I will accept some. Don't quote me on this, Mr. Hidlip, if you would, but I attempted to get the legislature to pass a law that would have allowed us to hire recent retirees in the elections world for the salary they left at and for a minimum number of days. But Senator Benton very kindly sponsored that, but unfortunately it got lost in the shuffle. So if Mr. Lickness were to charge us, that would be a detriment to his other
retirement.
But I can't tell you how much I appreciate Tim being here.
Thank you, Tim.
33 years of 30 whatever years of experience.
You can come out to my house and pull some weeds.
There you go.
I'm there, buddy. I'm there.
I'll go pull some weeds for you.
After this rain, I'm ready for it. So as I understand it, I think there were three options the board is considering. The first option is what was put forth in the original resolution that was passed last week, which is that we have five different positions in each of the three county commissioner districts. And then a voter would have the opportunity to cast a vote for one candidate in each of those five positions. The second alternative, and I'll call this an at-large election, is where all the candidates file for one place. And you could have three candidates, and this is going to occur separately in each of the three county commissioner districts. You could have three candidates file in that one place, or you could have 300 candidates file in that one place. And then there are two derivations of that sort of at-large scenario, as I understand your interest in getting information about. And the first derivation is voters would get five votes, and they would be able to pick five people to cast their vote for. And then the third derivation that I understand you're looking for information about is where voters would have one vote to cast among that pool of candidates. Do I accurately describe the three options that commissioners want to think about?
So you can divide, let's say, let's just for the sake of simplicity, assume we're only going to talk about one district.
Okay.
Okay. So in that, you can have five different offices, and for each one of those offices, you have a list of candidates. And that's one way. Another one is you have a long list of candidates, and you pick five.
Right. So are those only two options we're to consider?
Are there other options?
You can pick one. You could have somebody pick
one. Oh, you can only
pick
one instead of picking, well, they're representing all
of us. I appreciate your grimace, and I appreciate your comment that they represent all of us, so we could easily take that off the table.
I thought a grimace was a frown.
If it's satisfactory to the board, we can no longer talk. We can stop any discussion of the final description that you just laid out, which is where, again, big pool of people,
mm-hmm.
And voters vote for one of those people.
And then the top five vote getters overall in that pool.
Well, I like the advantages. We got to consider what could go wrong, too. For instance, it's going to happen where you're going to get people are going to vote for six. What's going to happen then? That invalidates all five, right?
Yep. So I'm gonna now step out of the discussion.
Well,
I know a little bit about voting systems and stuff, but you've got set before you people who have spent their lives in the elections world and have studied it to the most intense degree. We have with us a person with a PhD in political science. So this is probably appropriate to let Dr. Long introduce herself.
Sure.
And let me refine the question. Mm-hmm. To refine the question, we have five positions. And instead of having people sign up for each position individually, we were concerned that some positions would have nobody filing for them, and some cases everybody filing for one. So would it be possible to have those five positions still there, the voter voting once for candidates, and then the top five vote getters could be either one, two, three, four, or five?
You can't do that. Yeah, I think you're really looking at option one, or the option where you have candidates competing against one another, a slate of candidates. To try to combine the two would be further confusing for the voter. Would be my assessment.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I think it might be helpful. First, maybe go ahead, Tom.
If a person's coming down to file for a freeholder, are they made aware of positions open?
We would make them aware of
it. So they're all okay.
We'd do a media release. We'd have a guidelines out on our website, explain what positions or how they are to file.
We would update daily on our website the positions, who has filed for them, what positions are open.
Okay, so that was one of my concerns, and I think that was one of the things that we thought that they may not have that information when they come down to file. And unknowingly, they would all file for the same position.
Yeah, we'll make sure that is updated. Oh,
that would solve the problem then that we're concerned with.
We've had two freeholder filing periods at elections in Clark County since 1980. Both of those were all listed as individual positions. So we had, I think, one we had seven candidates in each commissioner district, and one we had five. And they were listed individually, and the candidates had to pick one and file for them. And that is, in fact, the way that virtually your offices are handled, and virtually every office in every election anybody votes in Clark County is handled. So it's similar and consistent with what past elections for all other offices. I cannot remember an election where somebody got to vote for two or more choices in Clark County. So it's very unusual and different from what people have done in the past. And the two times we have done it, the commissioners at those points in time made the decision that it would be, for consistency's sake with other election processes, and for that very same reason. And when we did that, the issue of everybody filing for one office, that goes away real quick. Because the first thing somebody wants to know is who's filed. Yeah. And we, you know, we'll either we'll have a list, Kathy will have a list on the website, and as soon as possible, there'll be a list, and then all the candidate filings go in a box on the counter. So anybody wants to come in can look and see exactly what's up to date, even if our lists aren't up to date.
Great.
So,
next question.
The issue about, I mean, I think the smallest office had 4 people file for it, and I think the biggest one had 7.
So. Yeah. I was just afraid that all 5 people from the same district would leave one spot.
The first question they have is who's filed already in which position?
There we go.
That's the first thing they want to know before they ever fill
out. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I look at the sample. This is very helpful. What makes this sample make sense, which makes things normal to have individual positions, is that normally you have incumbents. In other words, I'm going to run against Jack Berkman. I'm going to run against Gene Harris. Those are known incumbents.
Freudian slip. Sorry.
No, those are the incumbents. Okay. Whether or not you're going to run. And they're up for election.
I think he just announced. I'm just saying.
Good thing I'm in the county here, not in the city. So if you don't have incumbents, it's kind of like the strategy that you use for an auction. You wait to the last second because you got the knowledge and say, I'm going to run for that position because... And so you end up with this mad dash at the end because it's so much strategy has to do with when you file, who you file against. If you know those people, I'm not running against that one. The other problem with this one of having non-incumbents that nobody knows is that you could have the winner of this one is... 10,000 votes to 8,000 votes in this one, and yet this person 49 votes to 15, and you end up with the 49 votes thinking that they're representing that district. So that's both of those are significant disadvantages.
I would offer up,
yeah, go ahead,
David, that that's no different than what happens right now. That's called a fall off. So when we have 84% turnout in the presidential election year. And just throw a number, 200,000 people vote. Only, I'll just throw a number again.
Kay.
Only 160,000 people vote for a county auditor.
Undervote.
Undervote.
Yeah. Well, and your race is a good example of between you two and between the president's race, there was drop off from president to this race, and then drop off from this race to your race.
I heard I got more than Obama in the 49th.
Did?
I did.
Oh, nice.
So the question of how severe will that drop off be in these races? Maybe the experts.
You can look at. I think you can look at past to freeholder elections. I don't think you're going to see a significant drop off. If somebody's with 5 positions, people are going to usually take the time to go through. You know, if they're going to vote in one, they'll probably vote in almost all 5 of them.
Well, okay. Well, I guess that wasn't quite the point I was trying to make. You may have good name recognition on one, and 2 real good name recognition on one. Another one, then we think, I don't know any of these people. And so you end up with a very high thing and a very low thing, and yet those are representing that district.
Yeah, that is the point we're making. It's called fall off.
So I'm not saying they're not voting.
No, you are saying they're not voting. You're saying that people are voting in large numbers for these popular candidates, for these well-known high name ID candidates, and small numbers of people are voting for the low name ID candidates. That difference is called fall off.
Not quite.
Okay.
I'm assuming that let's say you've got one race that has 3 people, okay, and one of those is real high name recognition. Another race that has 10 people, and they don't know anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so you end up with these very low counts that are going to be included that represent the district compared to the people that really know, in contrast to the top 5, which is the most representative of the people of the district because they got the top 5 votes.
I get what you're saying. So say you got 10 people and they all get 10%. or 11, between 8 and 11%, you know, and it's the same number of overall votes for each one of the position one and position two. Position one has one high name recognition person that everybody says, oh yeah, that's the person. They get 80%, and just to put a crazy number out there. And then, but in position two, the top vote getter gets 12% or 10% or something like that. Then there's a huge discrepancy between the number of votes between those two positions with that. Mm-hmm. Again, that tends to be how it happens in now with any time when you have a position, like if you don't have an incumbent in one of these positions, which happens, they'll split the votes and they'll get 33% and they'll win versus someone, or win the primary if it's a partisan and it'd win the general, the percentage ends up being a little bit more split.
Yeah.
So how does that work with the freeholders?
Well, it would just be that one person would get a much lower percentage and would serve. And so I think the point is, if I may, then that it's an argument for going to a top five.
Yes.
Because then
I'm arguing for top five.
Then you would have the highest five getting,
in that.
But they say we can't do that.
Well, no,
we can't do that.
You can. That's one of the. Yeah. That was one of the options. You just can't have it by position. You can have it by district.
You can't do both at the same time. It's which is different. What they thought you were saying.
It's different than other offices that we do, and it's different than what the freeholder elections in the past have been.
But it's not different than what several other counties, because you have the other counties, and the Assotin County did it for vote for one candidate by district, not position. Kitsap County had vote for seven. And then those were the two that I think.
I think there are three in here. If you look at the three options on under question number two, I've kind of listed the different options of how we could do it and provided some kind of positives and negatives with each of those.
Mm-hmm.
And also behind that, the sample you're looking at here is really because one of the negatives about putting them listing 25 all on one ballot is the response positions are very close. And when you have a large list, we have to make sure that the fold lines land between the response positions so they won't inadvertently cast a ballot. That's why I provided you a sample. But further on in this packet, you'll see the samples of what the actual ballots would look like for the different options. I've listed
so
like that.
Like
District 1,
like
county freeholders. Yeah, you can do it by position, or you could do it by the district where you list all of them. You would also have to have room for five write-ins if you did.
Carla's running? Oh, my God.
That's my sister.
Nice.
And then you could also choose to do it where you're just voting for one. But there's some positive and negatives for all three of those options.
In any case, if you're going to have 15 positions, and you're going to have, I assume, multiple people, candidates filing for each position, you're going to have a page full of
five
candidates.
Positions. Remember, only five, because you'll only see, like, in your commissioner district, you as a voter will see five positions.
Good point.
So it won't be pages. Well, so, it could be, I guess. I mean, it depends on how many people file in each district.
Depending on how many people file, you can have next column.
So the logistics of it, you can make it work. You can lay it out in a way that's not confusing.
You have the potential of creating confusion with the voter.
Well,
it's different than what you've done in the past, and you break between column. You know, you could end up moving more names to the next column, and
how would you accommodate it? Let's say you have a very large list of candidates, and it rolls over from one page.
And who's on that second page?
I don't know.
Well, we're not supposed to put them on the second page, but we can go up to 11 by 7. Format. We could have a second page that is just for freeholders. There are other ways to accommodate that.
Yeah.
So,
but Greg, you said something. I didn't interrupt. You said something that it's something different than what we've done in the past, and we don't want to confuse anybody.
Well, this is pretty straightforward. Look at that.
It would be unless you went to a second or third page.
Or if you voted for six or four and all
maybe
that.
This would be a good time
to have Carolyn help us.
Dr. Long, sorry. And provide some perspective.
Sure, yeah, and thank you for inviting me. I was asked about this morning, so I have just a couple of thoughts that maybe will move us in a different direction. I'm a political science professor at Washington State University. I'm currently the Vice Chancellor of Academic Affairs. My comments here obviously don't reflect the university's comments. I'm just here given my expertise in electoral politics. And I spoke with Dr. Mark Stefan, whom some of you know, who's also a political science professor.
Background or education or experience?
PhD, political science. I've been at WSU for 18 years now. My focus is American institution and politics and public law. For the entire Board of Commissioners, I was involved in the freeholder effort in 2000. Bill, correct me if I'm wrong.
Was it 2000?
No,
it was 2000. When it started. 2002
when it was over. Yeah.
No, I helped run a series of workshops to help the freeholders through the process and to provide information. So this is a bit of my wheelhouse, and I enjoy these opportunities to sort of share my understanding of the whole process. So I'd like to just take this in a different direction as to some of the disadvantages I see with the option that has been used in the past and the option you're considering about the top five individuals. Mm-hmm. I noted that traditionally, nationally, the approach that has been used previously, which is where you've got candidates competing against one another rather than slates of candidates, nationally, that's the norm. I know that there have been some exceptions in Washington State, but that's the norm, so I wanted to mention that. So the idea of doing what's been done in the past is often very comfortable for the voter because when they face something that's unfamiliar, that adds to the problems that you've currently identified. So while voting for five sounds simplistic, it does carry a host of challenges. All of these options are what are called at-large elections, which is not often the most desirable way to conduct them. As a legislator, you know, when you represent a district, that's oftentimes the best way of running an election because you know who your constituencies are. That said, these are very different types of at-large elections. I think that if you are interested in having a process that's most democratic, that's most accessible to the voters, meaning it's easy to understand, they're able to get information and utilize that information in casting their ballots, then I think the process of having voters vote for these five separate elections with candidates competing against one another is the best one, which allows them to make an informed vote. They're familiar with it. They can make comparisons between candidates. I'm assuming there'll be a voter guide to assist them. Because there are a smaller number of individuals they're comparing against one another, it makes it much more accessible for them for that reason as well. The challenge that I see with the slate of candidates, which is the other proposal, and these two variations.
When you say slate, you mean the long list?
The long list. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And this is often known as what's called a plurality at large election, or what's called multiple non-transferable votes, which probably is mumble jumble to each of you. But it essentially means you vote for the top five.
Right.
So the challenges that I see, one for the voter, is it is less familiar to them. So they're more likely to make error, and voter error is a problem because what happens is you end up throwing out ballots, and that has an effect of depressing the vote and the result. So I think that the confusion is a problem. The other problem is that with a large list of candidates, voters are less likely to make those comparative assessments, and they're less likely to do the homework it takes to find out about the candidates, which I think we want voters to do in order to make an informed choice. It's just such a long list, it has a tendency to depress voter activity, and that becomes a problem. The other challenge is that with these block votes, you have what we see in the literature, landslide results. So five people will get all of the votes, and then there'll be that significant drop-off, not in voting, but drop-off in who gets the other votes. And the reason for that are compelling, and they're the ones that I want to talk about. When you have block voting like this, it has the tendency to open up the process, to make it susceptible to highly organized special interests who are most likely to look at this in a tactical way and to advertise to voters, these are the five people you should vote for because they represent the district. And that means that you will be inadvertently advantaging certain groups other than others, and usually those are groups who have money and they're highly organized. As a result of that, what we see in political science literature is that when that occurs, people are less satisfied with the electoral results because they see that there was an influence of money that swayed the results, and they saw that it was the influence of people who were highly organized and had a goal in mind, and the goal in mind might not be one shared by the majority in the community. So the susceptibility to external political pressures, I think, is a challenge. I think that the fact that voters would not be familiar with this process and may also be susceptible to those special interests is challenging, and I think that it could have a negative result on the election. I think we're not entertaining option three, where candidates would only select one individual. I think that's a terrible idea, because then you only get one choice. So it's the combination of the problems with this at-large election with slates of voters combined with hardly any choice, which is one choice, and I think it would lead to really odd results. So if your objective, and I believe it is the case, is to have a democratic election with as many voices present, with large voter participation, with ease of voter participation, if that is your goal, and if it's combined with the goal of not giving a disproportionate amount of influence to people who have special interests, who have moneyed interests, who have a dog in this fight, then you should choose option one. Mm-hmm. And that would be my recommendation. And I think it's backed by the literature. And so that would be my initial assessment. I'm happy to answer.
That's great.
Questions?
Yeah, that's a very compelling argument. I didn't think I would be persuaded that way, but I am. I can foresee, though, knowing how people strategize and try to gain whatever advantage they can. After all, they're running in a race. That I can imagine, like an auction at the end, you want to be able to wait till the last bid's in and then get yours in there. And so I can imagine here it's approaching 5 o'clock on the last day, and they're looking to see who else and is running, and so I'm going to run for position number... Oh, is that one more?
I want to be in the top 5 on that list.
So, how does that work? When do you... let's say you're registering for one of these positions. At what point do you elect position number 3?
You fill out a declaration of candidacy form, and it'll tell you.
So it's just one of the entries you put in there,
right? And if you choose to alter it and withdraw from one, you have to fill out a withdrawal form saying you were withdrawing from position 1. You might choose to go to position 3. We have a lot of this last minute changes. We did on the candidate filing that we just had here in May. So yeah. People do make these last-minute decisions based on who's already filed.
Like Bill.
You're in this case, something. There's no fee, so it's no no loss of fee. No,
right.
You can charge a fee.
You might change two or three times.
That's what some of the districts have, where you have, they have, okay. We have salaries, we have fees, which if there's a cost to pulling out and getting back in, you have to pay another fee again, and you don't get your filing fee back.
Yeah, I was just going to offer up that we have dealt with these last-minute filings and last-minute withdrawals, and it is an inconvenience for us here at the elections office, and people can try to be clever about it, but ultimately, it doesn't affect the voter.
Yeah. Well, and ultimately, I mean, and it's been said before, like Bill just said it, Councilman Turley said it, people need choice, so he saw one person filed for it, and at the end of it, he said... his quote was, "People need a the voters need a choice," so we signed up.
And that's how you get a new mayor.
Not my mayor, but
maybe you want a mayor. Let me suggest that the strategy that goes on in strategy the filing of the candidates is really less important to what happens once the filings have taken place and the voters are faced with the selection of the candidates. Mm-hmm. That is what they will be paying attention to. Uh-huh. So I think as people who are elected or appointed and are interested in political science, we're interested in the strategy, but really what's important is what faces the voter and then what happens after those candidates have been selected in terms of how the political machines then go into operation, mm-hmm. and how that will have an influence on the voting. Mm-hmm. So that's where my concerns are, more so than the logistics. Mm-hmm.
Well, I like I'm compelled by the notion of looking at the voter's pamphlet and having 30 names to go through and voter statements and try to figure out, okay, which it 5 and how am I comparing these, and it does make it more complex for me as a voter than I say, all right, I got 2-3 people and I can directly compare these 2 or 3 people on what they say they're going to do for me as a voter. That does make sense to me.
It makes it more bite-sized.
Next question.
You will be...
Was there another question?
Well, first of all, this is for freeholders, so...
Just options.
The vast majority of candidates will not be putting that much effort into strategizing. You may have a candidate who pays attention, who is there, does change something at the last minute, a position to a different position, but, their advantage is they care enough to pay attention, and they're there. I mean, that's fine. I mean, that's completely reasonable they're dedicated.
You set up the rules and people play the game.
Hey, Tim, has that happened the last few times? We've done it twice. Has that happened?
I can't see where I've seen that, no.
Okay.
I mean, most of the candidates probably filed in the first two or three days of the week.
You okay.
had a few people that waited the last minute. Most of the folks came in and filed fairly early. And they most of these, running against them and
having managed the last process, most of these were non-politicians, too. Gozer had no idea
how
about politics.
How
activists. I know. It is actually
they were, they were not familiar with the
commissioners, but yeah.
Well, Jim Dunn was a legislator, and there was one other person.
Really, non-professional people like that, they're totally out. Yeah. You know, they're not political.
So, okay.
Any
change in the partisan statute? We still have to go with a non-partisan.
Well, since we're still in session, we can get them to change it if you want.
They're doing budget
okay.
work, man.
Okay. They want to make sure there's no change.
Well, so do you have a copy of the law that pertains to that, answer that question?
Yeah.
Okay. Funny I should ask. You just have to bring some
stuff. RCW 29A 52112.
So I was in the legislature when they were making all these changes.
It was probably
the
your fault.
State of Washington. And we were all confused being involved in it. So I imagine by now they've got that worked out.
You know, this last session, Secretary of State's office did finally get a cleanup bill through that took a lot of the old stuff out. Yeah, just now.
Oh, wow.
Just now, because, you know, for a long time we had 38 vote-by-mail counties and one county that had vote-by-mail and polling places.
Mm-hmm.
And then now that Pierce County is also a vote-by-mail, it was a lot easier to go in and kind of clean up a lot of election stuff.
So, other questions?
Nope.
I'll study this. This is the only thing, and this is the current. It says change in 2013. Did they just change this?
They did just change it, and that was that House Bill 1195 that removed the exception for unexpired terms during a primary, like the superintendent of public instruction. They wouldn't have to have a primary. They could be elected at the primary.
So just to say that again. So if someone leaves an office, there's a legislator who's in office, and they vacate that office, and then there's an election to fill the unexpired portion of that term. It used to be if only two candidates filed, there was no primary.
Mm-hmm.
Forgot that?
Mm-hmm.
Now with this new change, if there's only two candidates or only one candidate, there will be a primary.
Did we have a primary? I don't think we had a primary. I think we
were
an example of that.
It has nothing to do with this freeholder thing. But
so I think Tom and I were an example of that, that I was appointed to fill the unexpired term for Pridemore, and the only two who filed were Tom and I for that position, and so we didn't have a primary that year. Because I remember the next year I was really surprised that I had a primary, but it was for a new term. And so
it was a partisan office. So
exactly, it was a partisan office for a new term, so I had to have a primary. But I was like, well, there's only two of us. Why am I having a primary?
Well, you know,
that's
was
why.
That's a question.
Yeah, I know, seriously. But so now we would have had to have had a primary as well. We would have had the two of us would have been in a primary.
Right, with this.
We call that gauging.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Or has something to do with fundraising as well? I don't know.
Heck yeah.
A little bit.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So there is one other issue that I brought up to Kathy, and I think we probably ought to add it to the resolution if you're of a mind. If there is not sufficient, for example, if we only have the ability to elect 14 freeholders, if not enough people show up, this provision in the statute provides that the vacancies in the position of freeholder shall be filled with a person qualified for the position who is appointed by a majority action of the remaining county freeholders. So that would be
from
the method.
From that district.
Who is qualified.
No. It does not say that in
statute. Well, it doesn't. Because all the other people have to be from the district.
Well, you would know which one. We don't have anybody. Say it's, you know, say we only get four from District 1.
Mm-hmm.
Has that happened, though, before?
No. Yes, it has. We had to fill, we had a vacancy occur after the election.
Oh, a vacancy after the election.
Yeah, but this would be, this is the only guidance we have.
As far as if somebody drops out of the process and says, this stinks, I don't want to be here.
And we have somebody get ill, yeah.
But that's in state law.
This is RCW 3642.
So why would you need to adjust the resolution to accommodate that?
I would put it in the resolution to accommodate the fact that if we only had 14 freeholders show up for get elected.
But that's never happened.
Ain't going to happen now.
It sounds like you're okay with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's in law, so we'll just revert back to the law.
Fine. Yeah, so, right, you follow the law.
As long as the RCW is covering, we're fine.
Okay. So then my instructions are...
You've got one office that's not filed for and another office...
We're on the agenda.
It's one of those two candidates.
One of those candidates is going to move.
Ferguson as it is, for positions.
Yes.
Okay. Well, the other possibility here, now's the time to talk about it, is... that if somebody doesn't file for an office, that normally you would extend another 3 days or something for somebody to be able to do that. Would that apply in this case?
It would.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would happen first, and still if nobody files, then that they fall back.
I can't imagine that's going to happen, even after you give an extra 3 days.
No, yeah, it's not going to happen. Just
scrambling.
Okay, so it looks like, according to this is absolutely clear, certain that it needs to be nonpartisan, because this is going to be an expensive election, because you've got probably 30 or more people. All of them have a blurb in the voter's pamphlet.
They all got something to say.
And that's going to be a thick voter's pamphlet. It's going to be a large ballot.
Two of those and
countywide.
In 100 words,
yeah.
Right?
Because a voter's pamphlet one voter's pamphlet countywide, right?
Yeah.
And actually, that's another reason why. What do you call the
slate?
No, the opposite of that. The five individual positions.
The option one.
Option one. Oh, just that you have individual.
What do you call it? Individual.
What do you call it?
There's no term, actually.
Yeah. One was called
doctor.
The slate.
We got
you can make one. There'll be some Latin term.
Yeah, you'd be a doctor.
Something in Latin you can throw at us? We won't know the difference. You can say whatever.
Yeah, being a doctor, you should be able to make one up.
For five positions
No, that was
you
called something.
We got a Yonte, it's all right.
I use different words for option two, which is plurality at large and multiple non-transfers.
There you go.
Okay, so
that's
not
singularity at large here.
Yeah, seriously.
Let's call option one.
Okay. All right. So
yeah, traditional way. Okay.
All right. We have a little bit more work that we need to do as a board. Are there any other changes or questions on the resolution moving
back to plan A?
Back to plan A. Okay.
Well, and I guess I just want to just pop up with the question to the doctor or anyone else who would like to opine on this. Of the various options that have been set before us, which one is the one that I guess you think serves the interests of the voters of Clark County the best? Which one is the most democratic? Which is the fairest to the voters? And just maybe just summarize.
Yeah, absolutely. Option one, the traditional option, which I'll call it now. I think it's the one that ensures greater voter participation, less likelihood of voter error. It insulates the process from a disproportionate influence to special interests from the outside, leads to a more diverse set of freeholders who are elected, which all, in my mind, translates into a more democratic process.
And yes. Your mind is something that's studied this for a long time, right?
Yeah. I
so we have a new
couple years.
Traditional.
We're all about tradition.
We got it.
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
The reason why it's so important, the reason why I want to thank Greg for inviting me here, is that the legitimacy of the election is important to the legitimacy of the freeholders' efforts.
Yeah.
In the end.
Yes. Well, because ultimately that has to go to the voters.
Well, see the Pledge of Allegiance now.
That's undemocratic now.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Great. Very
thank
good.
You that so much, Greg. Dr. Long, thank you so much for the insights on that.
Thank you.
That's outstanding.
Thank you.
Kathy, great work.
Thank you.
Yeah. Don't feel like you need this old guy around you.
Don't feel like you have this old guy sniffing around you over your shoulder.
I've called him. He's on the phone for over an hour.
He's a retired man. The great thing with Tim is you just call him like, Tim, what happened 10 years ago in this election to that? And he'd be like, bang.
I know, exactly. He promised me. He was always at the other end of the cell phone.
That's awesome. Very good. Thanks, Kathy. Appreciate it.
That we have positive thinking people.
That's good information.
She's
pretty smart. Wow.
I like it when it's very clear.
Yeah,
and that was very
clear. That really was.
See, compelling arguments do work. Follow the truth wherever it leads.
I agree. I totally agree.
So it makes those lead meetings long.
What do we got?
Why did you come down here? You're getting all frisky. You wanted to come down
there. Still in my seat. I got kicked out down
there.
I got up for a minute. I came back. I'm almost gone.
Top five. Getting closer. Yeah, we're in the top five.
For positive people.
want to do the best for the county. And if they don't see
and we're not, you're not, I don't even know if county commissioners can legally run for freeholders, but we're not running for freeholder, I would hope.
I've got my hands full.
Seriously, I got my hands full. I have no desire to. They will be sending something to the voters, and I don't want to get anywhere near that. But I don't even know if you can legally.
You could nominate Lickness.
Nominate Lickness. Lickness, actually, I'll tell you. Talking about Lickness. Yeah, seriously.
I really have four.
Commissioner? The commissioner's over here trying to work.
Hey, we're sorry about that.
Good to see
Tim,
you.
Tim, go do that.
Tim, thank you so much for coming in.
It's great seeing you, buddy.
Yeah, stop by once in a while.
No doubt. All right, back to work.
Wow.
That was great information. It was definitely. That was almost fun, though, listening to all the what they had to say.
Work is fun when you're doing it right, right?
Fair enough. Yeah, all right. Yeah. So, we're commissioner reports. Did you guys have anything else
I was
for
done.
Commissioner reports? Were you?
No.
Okay. I had a couple of things. Requests.
I'm sorry. Time's
yeah, exactly. Requests for our lobbyist. Number one, we got a legislative alert, which is what I need to call WASAC about already. A legislative alert from WASAC that the Senate's, they talked about it today, is the Senate's most recent budget proposal has doubled the cut to our county's chemical dependency treatment grant. It was originally a 10% cut. It's now a 20% cut, which would be devastating to the infrastructure of chemical dependency treatment.
Which you just heard this morning.
Yes. And our good Senator Rivers offered an amendment to restore $8 million of that cut. So basically, back to the original 10% cut. It failed in committee but has a good chance of passing on the floor, but he's saying we need help to let legislators know that any cut, even the 10%, would be devastating, mm-hmm. but he needs action on this from the members.
That's going into our second. They're called back to another special.
Yeah. This is part of their budget, so this is part of what they're arguing and hot. Senator Rivers is a friend and an advocate on this, and so the request is to have Burgess be working this.
I would assume that she mm-hmm. knows what is achievable to support her, because she's pulling on the right end of the rope.
I bet you Representative Mueller will be there, too.
I would hope so. Well, but this is the Senate talking about it, right? So the Senate's doing their budget right now. The House already approved theirs, and it didn't have the steep of a cut in the chemical dependency treatment. Okay. So they're working Senate side right now.
Okay.
So we need help from Don's going, hey, Don! Yeah. We need help from our Senate. So the request is to have Mike work in the Senate and working with WASAC on that. Good?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll get a hold of Burgess on that. Actually, since those two were together, that was the only legislative. So there were two legislative things, and that was it. On those, there was one other thing. Sorry, on the legislative front, the Senate, the House raided, and I mentioned this at the hearing. The House raided the Public Works Assistance account. Just for us, that means no money for 10th.
For what?
10th Avenue.
10th Avenue, the extension of 10th on the west side of the highway. That means the $10 million that was...
We thought we were going to get...
Gone. And so the request... So the Senate has not made the same action yet. They're discussing the budget right now. So the request would be to have... And WASAC, again, is working this pretty hard from a association standpoint, would be to ask while Mike's talking to our senators about the chemical dependency treatment funds, that he also be talking to them about the importance of the Public Works Assistance Account for infrastructure.
It is, because that allows that provides for transportation infrastructure that's really under the control of the counties, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's local infrastructure.
Which is a lot smarter than how they've been wasting our money at the state level. So I'm all for it.
Clark County Economic Development.
Yeah. And it's not just transportation. Yeah. It's water, sewer, stormwater, and bridges as well. I mean, all local infrastructure projects that are all stripped out so that they can pay for some operating deficit at the state level.
Those rascals, they're creating a disaster so they can fill the disaster with a tax hike.
Totally agree. All right, so those are the things. I'll call Burgess after this and get him on those. Those are really the only things I had. Axel.
This is the letter I want you to sign. It's related to the work session on the quiet zone. It's just the re-notification.
Oh, good, good, good.
Hey, we're going forward with that.
We get to put our name on your work?
Yep.
Nice.
Oh,
well,
I signed it first time. He makes us look good.
We get credit for everything.
This is what Bill has always said. This is his job to make us look good. And Axel's right in it.
Just one.
That's a win for everybody.
I already talked about the panhandling ordinance. I went to a couple meetings. I went to one meeting for Commissioner Milkey on Friday, Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board. There was enough of a takeaway there I wanted to share with you.
Did you drive all the way up there?
Yeah.
Was it in Longview, or where was it at?
It was in Kelsey.
Oh, okay.
And so the big deal there, though, is without a state budget, they are funded through the state through what's called surfboard funds. You know, whatever. It is what it is. It's confusing. But the long story short is they're funded with this salmon recovery money. And they also have contractors that are out doing projects for salmon recovery on the ground right now, funded with this money. Well, the authorization to spend the money runs out on June 30th. And so they're scrambling. They're literally having a contingency plan to shut the doors down. The staff will go home unpaid. The contracts will stop in the field. And they're, according to Jeff, there really isn't much we can do about it. So he was supposed to send me bullet points. Here's what we're going to do about it. Here's some bullets.
Seriously.
He's going to send me some bullet points on what we could prepare for a letter to the state, basically laying out the emergency that's going on without this authorization. But I just wanted to let you know that's happening. It could happen at the end of the month.
Wow.
So you are going to draft a letter?
I haven't got the email yet, but Melody's going to send it to me.
Perfect.
Fish and Wildlife meeting Saturday morning in Olympia. I thought it went well. It was a good presentation, but not a lot of answers.
No real action, it sounds like.
Hoof rot. They still don't know what's causing it. They sent samples all over. They're going to try a couple more things. They're going to put together this kind of Southwest Washington committee.
The good news is Axel and I are on it. We're going to try to kill a couple of elk this year to see if we can find out.
I want to find out if you can eat them. I want to know if you can eat them yet.
The state biologist was there. That was good.
She said it may be dangerous, but she did say she thought that
it could.
That's covered.
I was a little disappointed there wasn't a representative from Region 5, our region, from Fish and Wildlife there. I thought that was strange, but I think there were some vacations and other things, but that was kind of.
So what's the follow-up on that?
They're going to put this committee together. I assume that we'll be at the meetings or we'll be on the committee.
Good.
Or represented, so we'll just keep working on it.
What else you got?
That's about it.
Great work, man.
I just want to say, Axel, you do a lot of work here. Mm-hmm. You really do. And I really appreciate it.
We appreciate taking the credit for all you do.
It's fun being involved.
I don't even really like you, I'm not sure why you're here.
You just need me.
Yeah.
That's right.
Whatever. It's fine.
Yeah. You can borrow my little quote here. I get so much done when you do it.
Right. Fair enough.
We all appreciate
it. We all
benefit.
That
goes for Bill here, too.
No doubt. Mary, what do you got?
I'm working on all the things we've been talking about.
Excellent. Good.
One way or another.
Perfect. Bill, and then you can roll straight into the vacancy stuff. That's all you had? Perfect. So what vacancy report we got last week, we got a request for 3 vacancies, mm-hmm. 2 from Environmental Services, 1 from Community Development. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Milkey wasn't with us, but have you had a chance to look at them?
Yes.
Excellent. And I've had a chance to look at them as well. Commissioner Mador?
So Environmental Services.
2 from Environmental Services.
That's good.
Two from community development.
Oh, I thought there was
and
one.
Community development is our permits. That's what that's for.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Green light.
Mm-hmm. Good. We good?
Okay.
We're good.
Those are 4. And then the only one was Francine, and I don't think she's done with her plan yet, so I'll keep that on for next week.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Any work session requests or anything else?
No, sir.
Oh, I love that.
Thank you.
No, I've been instructed there's no more work sessions after noon from now on.
And is our discussion complete? I'm just trying it out. I'm seeing how that works.
I just got to warm it up a little bit. She didn't even get that. It's 5 o'clock on a Wednesday. It's not even getting
that. Look what a good
I'm going to have to kick you again.
All right. With that, then, we're adjourned. Yeah, thanks, everybody. Good job. That is 2 long days of work, guys. Nice work.
Seriously, this has been a long couple.
Mine wasn't as long as yours yesterday.
Yeah, I get it.
The Substance Abuse Advisory Board.
Substance Abuse Advisory Board is going to want an iPhone vote to work.
You guys all still have to vote on that three-holder stuff, right?
Yeah, next Tuesday. Yeah, well, we postponed to we put it on the agenda for next Tuesday on the consent agenda.
I'm right there with you.
Item one.
Item one on the consent agenda.
Okay.
All right. Red, Pauline, thanks again for it's always good to see you. We want to keep you entertained. You know?
Look, we're going to go on a treasure hunt right now. You got a key and I got a map.
What are you showing?
I
got the keys and maps.
We're going to go out there tomorrow.
To where? Oh, to the camp. Awesome.
Yeah.
So next week, I'd love to get that metal detector, see if I can find that phone.
Oh, I forgot.
Don't worry about it. I literally buried it in my backyard. Seriously, I was working on Saturday and Sunday basically all weekend, other than a couple of events, to put in sod, bark, plants, all this stuff. So I mean, I was just grimy working all weekend, and on Saturday I'm looking around and I didn't really go anywhere except for to the hardware store, and I asked them, and I'm like, now we have a tent. It's got to be somewhere, and I looked all around everywhere, and I'm pretty sure I buried it because I had it in a pocket in my shorts, and I was constantly like, I was up and down constantly, so I'm pretty sure it just fell out.
You'll be on the backyard, you never on the ground.
I know, seriously. Where are you?
I'm gonna send a photographer out there and meet us.
Okay.
Do you want to put rings?
I've got one small meeting after my breakfast.
That's
thing.
Fine. What, do you want to do it a little later?
No, I think I'm scheduled for about a half hour.
Elder abuse. Yeah. Okay. That's the awareness thing that there is. We all need to watch out for each other because that is one of the highest crimes that can be mastered.
We have a daughter who's specifically, and they really are functioning at a level that they are not aware of. A lot of things.
And people take advantage of them.
And fortunately, I really feel this is a good place where they're considerate and they go out of their way to try to really be patient.
Thank you, sir. Good to see you.
But when there's nobody coming to see them, year after year, it's so easy for even the good attenders to slack off.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people would help when you help them because they knew they need. For instance, if there's, let's say, a senior home, care home, and one of the people in the area,
they should.
And they'll pull it out.
They should. The churches should get involved in that.
Yeah, but they don't know. So,
thanks for coming, guys.
Bill, are you good at anything?
No, I'm good. Thank you.